support the economy with City of Portland property and business taxes and utility fees. So I certainly support the intent, and I agree with the mayor that there's been a lot of misinformation in the media about water and sewer rates. And as we move forward with the Office of Equity, we are going to need to have those discussions about sometimes getting to equitable outcomes does cost more, because in the past we have disadvantaged people systematically. And so now we need to look at systematically giving folks a chance to get the education that their parents never had. So the project is great. The funding of scholarships at community colleges, which, as we heard this morning, is a very cost-effective way of getting training or going on to a four-year degree, and that's open to many people within our community, that's a wonderful thing. And so I, again, laud the mayor for this initiative. Aye.
Adams.
Aye. So approved. Can you please read the title for emergency ordinance item number 328?
Authorize an intergovernmental agreement and accept a grant in the amount of $50,000 from the Oregon Department of Transportation for construction of Interstate 205 multi-use path improvements adjacent to Northeast 97th Ave from Gleason Street to Davis Street.
Can you also read emergency ordinance item number 329?
Authorize an intergovernmental agreement and accept a grant in the amount of $407,516 from the Portland Development Commission for construction of street, sidewalk, and stormwater improvements to Northeast 97th Avenue from Gleason Street to Davis Street.
Mr. Abbey, should I keep going, or are those the two that relate to
yep.
each other?
No, okay. You're good. Good afternoon, Mayor Adams. I'm Andrew Abbey, Local Improvement District Administrator and Project Manager. The two items before you would bring the total funding for the Northeast 97th Avenue Green Street LID from the $400,000 that we started with on the LID would bring the total funding up to $1.4 million. So we've been able to take the $400,000 in LID funding and leverage it with $1 million of additional funding to benefit East Portland. And I have a couple funding partners with me here today to speak more about that partnership. Sue Keel, Director of the Bureau of Transportation, is joining me today, as is Sue Lewis from the Portland Development Commission and Shelley Romero from ODOT. Thank you.
Come up and join Mr. Abbey, or substitute for Mr. Abbey. We appreciate your responsiveness, Director Keel.
But if I'd listened a little closer, I would have been, you know, a little more on button. So this is a short and sweet kind of item, and I thought you could probably use it today in light of what you've been doing. East Portland is where we have our most serious traffic problems, along with Southwest Portland, and our biggest deficiencies in terms of connectivity, and we're happy to invest here. This is a smart way to do business. You know, at the Safety Summit, we talked about how we were joined at the hip with ODOT. This is really one of those where we are joined at the hip. We're working on things together simultaneously and with a lot of cost savings as a result. It also avoids that kind of disruption for the property owners that are right along there, because we're doing things once instead of doing them separately. And if ODOT had not allowed us to build in that right-of-way, build the sidewalk in the right-of-way on the west side, we would have had to pay for right-of-way. So this is a pretty, that's a very substantial kind of donation. It makes the whole project work right. We would have had to drop the sidewalk on the west side of the street in the pedestrian district if we hadn't been able to put it where we're putting it on this project. And you look at your map, you can see where that occurs. Improving the appearance of the path and adding stormwater drainage is going to help for the development, the residential development that's along there. And from my perspective, a really nice thing is that now pedestrians and bicyclists are not going to have to wade through a lake as they use this facility. So,
Sue, I have a question.
Yeah.
There's been some talk of dedicating one of the trails along 205 to Woody Guthrie. Now, is that trail on the other side, or is that further?
She knows. Shelley knows.
How does that issue relate to what we're doing today?
It doesn't, but could the I-205...
Could you please give your name for the record?
Sorry, it's Shelley okay. Romero, ODOT, Region 1. The I-205 multi-use path, it has been proposed by folks, primarily I've heard Nick Sovey and others in East Portland talking about renaming the I-205 multi-use path to the Woody Guthrie Trail, and ODOT has a naming process and procedure that's been outlined to Nick and others as to how they can pursue that.
So it's not here. It's in Woody Guthrie lived in a house right off 92nd in Foster, so it's that yes. portion.
So it's that portion, but it's on this side. It's,
he did?
Is it an extension of this down there, or is it a different trail?
It's on the other
yeah.
side of the
other yeah, freeway. The 205 path is a 16.5-mile path.
Commissioner Leonard, as the resident historian, apparently what were the songs that he wrote while he lived there?
A number of them, and I'll be glad to sing for you later.
That's okay. We have time limits here.
This would be a nice lull.
Put you all to sleep or drive you absolutely crazy.
And did you want to say more?
Just that this area of the 205 path has historically been a problem area for us in terms of gathering water and drainage, so we're really pleased to partner with the city and PDC on this project. And it's worth noting that this project alone is ticking. It meets with three of the goals outlined in the East Portland Action Plan, and it's T.25, which is improving landscape cleanliness and patrolling of the multi-use paths and neighborhood pedestrian paths, and T.6.6, acquire property and develop streets in Central Gateway, and T.5.2, develop information and outreach campaigns to residents along unimproved streets to increase participation in local and to establish local improvement districts. And just that we agree with the comments made by Director Keel that it's great to have this intergovernmental cooperation in an effort to better serve the community.
I am Sue Lewis with the Portland Development Commission. I work in the Gateway URA. One of the things we selected this street because it was going to leverage private investment on the street. So not only has it leveraged the pending private investment, it's been a very collaborative effort with PBOT, Bureau of Environmental Services, and ODOT, and the residences, the property owners who live on the street who are investing in this area. And it will create jobs, improve access, establish sidewalk connections for the benefit of local residents, specifically at the Gateway Care Center, who will now be able to walk safely in the area and get outside and exercise. And we're very glad to be a part of this. Thank you.
And if I'm not mistaken, the Gateway Care Center actually has facilities on both sides of 98th, and that this will relieve some of the access issues between their two facilities mm-hmm. by allowing traffic to use 97th.
Yeah, the intent is to, part of the Gateway Master Street Plan, we'll put through a street called, would be Flanders Street, and that would create the circular motion, and it should be a one-way street to 98, and again, with the care center connected in a circular motion there.
Great.
And the money from the $407,000 from Portland Development Commission is from the Urban Renewal District?
It is partially from the Urban Renewal District and partially from grants from the Bureau of Environmental Services, who are investing in 1% for Green and the Watershed Improvement Fund. And it is funding approximately two-thirds of the project, where a third is funded from the property owners on the street.
That's really great. So that plus the $50,000 is close to $500,000 for this project. And again, evidence that we really are working to plug away at the East Portland Action Plan action items. Thank you for bringing that to our attention, Ms. Romero.
That's great leverage.
Thank you to you and the Portland Development Commission as well. Okay, so is there anyone signed up to discuss either 328 or 329? All right. Can you please call the vote on starting with 328?
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, good work, everybody. Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Well, the three of you must have spent almost as much time here today as we have, so thank you very much for still being here and coming back to tell us about this wonderful project. And thank you, Andrew. Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Can you please call the vote for 329?
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Adams?
Thank you, Mr. Abbey, and everyone else, part of the team. Really appreciate it. Aye. Can you please read the title for emergency ordinance item number 330?
create a local improvement district to construct street, sidewalk, and stormwater improvements in the Southeast 82nd Avenue of Roses and Bybee Boulevard Local Improvement District.
What are we looking at here?
Good afternoon, Mayor Adams. Andrew Abbey, Local Improvement District Administrator and Project Manager. We received no remonstrances against the LID formation. The recommendation is to approve the ordinance.
So move.
Is there anyone here that wishes to testify on this matter? Sue, would you please call the vote?
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fitz.
Again, thank you for your good work. Aye.
Adams.
Aye. 330 is approved. Can you please read the title for emergency ordinance, Council Calendar Item Number 331?
Authorize a contract with Marsh USA, Inc. for a business impact analysis and continuity strategy for a total not to exceed amount of $120,000.
I am glad you have been able to take advantage of the free Wi-Fi here in City Hall because you have had to wait a long time. And
I love it.
We appreciate your patience.
Well, thank you. I'm Logan Clyer. I work for the Bureau of Technology Services.
And I'm Valentine Hellman with the Office of Emergency Management.
And this contract is a contract between the City of Portland and Marsh USA Incorporated to help the city and its regional partners, various county organizations, as well as the Port of Portland and CTRAN, take a look at certain public safety technology systems to better understand them and to make certain improvements over the next few years through the use of UASI or Urban Area Security Initiative grant funds.
So this expenditure of this allows us to qualify for potential future federal funding.
Right. This is the document that creates the plan. And then once that plan is in place, these recommendations are in place, the Portland Office of Emergency Management would work to help prioritize any funds to help improve certain public safety technology systems.
So it's analogous to the work we have to do in transportation where you have to plan in a way that the federal government requires you to in order to be eligible for future federal government grants.
Right. We want to have a regional approach to what is important to fix and then approach those through the regional process of, you know, these systems have these things that we could fix. We'll apply for grant funds and work our way down from the high priority items to the low priority items.
Great. Ms. Valentine, do you have anything to add?
No. Logan covered it.
So what will be the process for the contractor to go about finding out the information?
They'll interact with people such as myself, other technology professionals in the Bureau of Technology Services to talk with them about various public safety technology systems, getting an inventory of, you know, where are the systems, how do they operate, who operates them, that sort of thing, and then making their recommendations based off of best practices to take a look at, given how they operate and who operates them, are there recommendations on things that we could apply for grant funds to make them more resilient.
Will there be any public involvement or involvement of either the technology committee and or the PSSRP advisory committee?
Well, this doesn't take effect for several months. So in terms of the PSSRP committee, this would be well after the go-live of CAD Next, and so we haven't particularly contemplated the activity of the PSSRP Oversight Committee. It wouldn't be affecting their operations, but it would be supplementing it.
I'm just thinking that they've learned a lot over the course of following the CAD Next, and they'll be continuing to work on the police radios and other things, that there may be some expertise there.
Yes, we – sorry, go ahead.
No, I think you misunderstood the,
okay.
The commissioner's question is, part of the inventorying, and granted it'll be after it's in place, part of the inventorying is, all right, we have this new system in place. Will we inventory what it's capable of from an emergency management response perspective? And I think the answer is yes.
Yes.
And what are the lessons that that committee has learned that could inform?
Right. Forward? Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. So the idea here is inventory what we have from the perspective of emergency preparation and emergency event management.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of that has to do with interoperability. A lot of it has to do with, as you mentioned in your introduction, it might work in good conditions. What happens if it's not so good conditions?
Right. Yeah, they take a look at the physical, you know, plant, understand whether that's resilient, take a look at how we operate it. Do we operate in a resilient manner? And then make recommendations of things that can make it more resilient, whether it's people, whether it's facilities that can be improved upon.
Any other council discussion? Does anyone wish to testify on emergency ordinance item number 331? Sue, would you please call the vote? Thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks.
Aye.
Houseman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Adams.
I do think the idea of having it as a, one of the items we discuss on your on the technology quarterly review at some point is a good idea. So we'll do that. Aye. 331 is approved. Can you please read the title for non-emergency ordinance, item number 332?
Amend city code to reflect current structure, operations, and new responsibilities in the Office of Management and Finance.
Director Rust, welcome back.
Good afternoon, Mayor, members of the Council. I'm Ken Rust, the Director of the Office of Management and Finance. There are actually two actions that will be in front of you here, this ordinance and then the report to Council following on the Technology Oversight Committee. The ordinance that's in front of you is amendments to city code that largely do a lot of cleanup work for the Office of Management and Finance, representing a lot of organizational changes and kind of the evolution of the office over the last few years. They're very much housekeeping in nature, and we've had an opportunity to talk with your offices about that. There is one area of substantive change, and that's dealing with the responsibilities that the council has given to me as the chief administrative officer with respect to the Technology Oversight Committee. It deals with forming that committee and supporting that with my staff, and also identifies the role that the Bureau of Technology Services will play in the support of that committee's work as well. So those are the biggest substantive issue areas. With that, I open up for any questions or comments that you might have on the code changes.
All right. Is there anyone wishes to testify on non-emergency ordinance item number 332?
So I just have an issue that I'm going to raise, which we'll be working with Ken and his staff on between now and next week when we'll be voting on it. We read some of the proposed administrative rules and code to give authority to the chief administrative officer to set classifications and salaries and such within the office and without having to come to council. And so I don't think that's the intent, and we'll work with your staff before next week to clarify.
Yeah, there are a couple that I don't think that it sets salaries that allows me to identify classifications for those positions that are engaged in the central administrative function of HR, technology services, and procurement or other areas that the council has designated as responsibilities for the chief administrative officer. The council would ultimately have to approve any of those positions and the salaries around that as well. So it's a practice that has been followed by not just my bureau, but other bureaus that own particular business processes, that they're the ones responsible for reviewing classifications as they get submitted by different bureaus to make sure that they're not bureaus sometimes like to use a classification that's really owned by a particular bureau entity in their own bureau. We're trying to have some definition around that so that we don't end up hiring two city treasurers or two city procurement officers. I mean, it can get very confusing in the administrative function area as to where that responsibility really lies. That's what we're really trying to do with that.
And I certainly appreciate that individual bureaus should not be making HR decisions without going through HR. The concern I want to make sure we have covered is that there's appropriate oversight of decisions on those lines made within the LMF. Thank you very much.
All right.
So
yes.
We're not voting today, right?
Nope.
Okay. I'd like to say that, you know, I do support this package, particularly the piece that Kim was just describing as it relates to creating the Independent Citizen Technology Oversight Committee. I think the language is simple and direct, and it's great, and I look forward to working with OMF, BTS, and the Auditor's Office on the final administrative rules that will implement this. Thanks.
All right. Unless any other comments, 332 moves to a second reading next week. Can you please read the title for report contained in item number 333?
Accept the report on creation of administrative rules for the Technology Oversight Committee.
Director Rust.
As I mentioned, the second item that's in front of you is the draft administrative rules associated with the Technology Oversight Committee. We're submitting it to you in report form so that you can view that. The council directed via resolution that I work on the development of the Technology Oversight Committee, and since that time I've been convening meetings with the city auditor, the city attorney, and city staff to develop these draft administrative rules. The report gives you that information. Clearly what we're looking at based on the direction we received from council is that the TOC would oversee significant city technology projects, that the TOC would be involved at the front end of projects before an RFP or an RFI is even developed or issued, and that bureaus with technology projects overseen by the TOC would be directed to include an external quality assurance consultant to reflect their expertise in those projects to provide that outside oversight. So the draft rules are in front of you. With the acceptance of the report, we'll continue to work on the rules and going through the rulemaking process and begin the actual empanelment of the committee itself and begin with this process.
Council discussion on this matter. Does anyone wish to testify on item number 333?
I have a comment.
Is there a motion to accept? Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
So I have, with the exception of BOA, with the Bureau of Emergency Communications, I have little bureaus that don't have technology projects. I'm still very concerned about how these rules come out. And so as you move forward with refining the administrative rules, I'd like somebody from my staff involved in those emails and circulating of those drafts. There's, a few things in the proposed administrative rules that we would have liked to have had some input on. So if we can just be involved from now on, that'd be great.
Certainly.
Mayor, I move the adoption of the report.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Sue, would you please call the vote on the motion to accept the report contained in 333?
Fish.
And thanks to you and your team for your good work in preparing this report. We look forward to refining the work going forward. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, as I said a second ago, it's great work. The rules are simple and great, and this is an important process. I guess I simply want to remind my colleagues on the council that pursuant to the technology oversight resolution we passed in February, it calls for each one of us to appoint a person to this committee. So my staff will certainly be contacting you in the next week to begin that process. I think we did a good job of getting five citizens, each appointed by us on the Fire Bond Oversight Committee, and I think we can we're up for it again. So great work. Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
So one of the things I'd like to see in the administrative rules as we move forward is that the Technology Oversight Committee can review all the, or gets a list of all the projects that have gone through the proposed four steps of getting bureau approval so that they can take a final look and say whether there are some that they'd like to pull out of the list to maybe have you take a look at, even if your staff decided that they were not feasible. So that's a piece that I think is important and in the spirit of what we've been discussing, and I appreciate your willingness to work with us on that. Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Report is accepted. Can you please read the title for emergency ordinance, item number 315?
Change the salary range for non-represented classification of labor relations coordinator.
Commissioner Fritz.
Well, first I'd like to remove the emergency clause because this is a change in salary amount. I don't see that there is an emergency, and I would like to have some more time to work with staff before next week to get my questions answered because I can't support it today.
Is there any initial discussion that you want to have besides that?
Sure. I'm concerned about a 10%. The 10.9% increase for these two employees. And let me state on the record, I don't know who these employees are. I don't want to know. It's not about the particular people. We have lots of employees who do really great work. I'd like to know what the market studies show in terms of union negotiators' pay, including what the private sectors and the unions pay for that classification. And I'm concerned about a large increase at the time that we're still pinching pennies and looking out for doing things as cost effectively as possible.
Sure. Commissioner, the way we got here was that one of our...
Director Decker, you have to introduce yourself.
Yvonne Decker, Bureau of Human Resources. The way we got here was when we entered contract negotiations this year, Multnomah County was actually recruiting for this position. Their salary range pays up to $109,000 for negotiators. We were at a point where we could not afford, with all of our contracts open, to lose our labor relations staff, which are the people that I appoint to go to the table, to each individual table, to act as negotiators. I asked David Reese, our class comp manager, to do a quick review and to give me a recommendation based on market and retention of being able to retain our people at a crucial time, what the appropriate adjustment, if any, was warranted. And so we did a quick market adjustment. Since then, we've gone out to look to make sure to view where we are as far as our ability to retain our labor relations staff. What I can tell you is that trained labor relations staff is at a real commodity. There are not a lot of individuals out there that are used to public sector negotiations and that do the work that we do in the public sector around negotiations and around our contractual requirements. We have a very small staff that do this work. It is really critical for the city that we can maintain them. This just closes the gap that we are faced with. I felt very, very strongly that it was important for the city not to be in a situation where we no longer had critical staff that could do this work at a very critical time. And that's how we got here.
What's our succession training for these positions?
This is very specialized work, so it's generally not work. Generally, people come in, they have to understand state collective bargaining laws. They have to understand the PECBA. They also have to be able to write contract language, interpret contract language. It is an area where everyone is desperately trying to hold on to the people that they have and hope that, you know, people aren't retiring. It takes a number of years to truly get someone ready to be able to go to the table and function independently and to be able to advise the bureaus in that way. And so even though we're always looking at how we can move people up internally, it does take, for this particular job, it's unique enough that people coming into it have to have a certain journeyman level of knowledge because you can't train from scratch for this particular type of work and classification. And that's, you know, the situation that the city is in right now. I don't think it's unique to the city.
Yvonne, is there any negative consequence to you in terms of what you're trying to achieve here if we were to take the emergency clause off and it would be passed to a second vote and then implemented 30 days thereafter? Does that hamper in any way what you're trying to accomplish?
No, we have the COLA ordinance that's coming up and we can bring it in, you know, deal with it as long as we deal with it, you know, prior to that so that we aren't, accruing costs by trying to do retroactivity and that sort of stuff.
I will note that we do have a tradition of delegating to HR some of these classification issues, and they are typically on consent on an emergency basis. But if Commissioner Fritz wants additional time, I'd be pleased to move for the...
What do we do to take the emergency off?
I'd move to remove the emergency clause.
Second.
And moved and seconded. Any discussion? Sue, would you call the vote on the motion?
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
I do think we need to reevaluate that and in the next Charter Commission look at the emergency ordinance designation so that we are truly refining it to use it when it really is an emergency. So that's a wider picture than this particular one, but I couldn't see how I could vote for this as an emergency. So I appreciate my colleagues taking the clause off. Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Moves to a second reading next week.
Eric, could we take a five-minute break until we bring up the additional items that you wanted to bring for the council?
Yes, well, but you know, I'm going to propose a break until next week. So we stand adjourned for the week.
Do we have an obsession tomorrow?
Council meetings.
The hidden agenda's time.
The hidden agenda.